Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our new website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans, and welcome to episode number 225 of the Peristyle Podcast. Today is June 18th, 2012. We've got a great show for you this week on the Peristyle Podcast. Coach Harvey Hyde is on secret assignment, so we're going to start off the show with USCFootball.com beat writer Dan Weber. We got a lot of questions to get to. We want to talk about the BCS, all kinds of questions about this USC football team. We're going to talk about USC offseason workouts. If you have any questions or comments, we love to hear from you. Drop us an email, podcast@uscfootball.com, or give us a call, 206-888-6755. Leave a brief voicemail, and we will play it on the Peristyle Podcast. And you can even leave a voicemail from your computer if you go to peristylepodcast.com. Go right there on the left side of the page. It says click to leave a voice message, and leave us a brief voice message. We'll play it on the air and do our best to answer your question. And like I said, we have Dan Weber on the show with us today. Dan, what's going on, sir? How are you?
Oh, doing good. Doing good. Getting excited for what's coming, we think. Just enjoying watching them in the workouts. Kind of having a different look a little bit with this team. They're growing up in front of your eyes. You didn't realize they were younger than you realized last year. And as you see them now, you realize they've got room to grow and mature, and they seem to be doing that.
Certainly, and we're gonna talk about what you've been observing the last couple of weeks for these off-season workouts, and it is a busy week, like you said. So today's podcast probably a little shorter. We're not gonna have Coach Harvey Hyde on. We're gonna try to squeeze in one tomorrow with Gerard Martinez because we do have a lot of recruiting questions already, and a lot is going on the recruiting front for USC, obviously, so we'll get those two in. I'm actually leaving, going to Atlanta on Tuesday, so I'll try to get the podcast in before that. I'll be down. We have our Rivals.com publisher conference, and then the big five-star challenge where there's a whole bunch of USC commits. They're pretty much dominating the West roster down there. So in Atlanta, it's going to be a lot of fun. We'll get a lot of footage and interviews and photos and all kinds of information on the USC commits and also the players that Lane Kiffin is still going after. So a lot of targets down there for USC. So it'll be a busy week. We'll do a lot of recruiting, especially later on in the week. And Dan, you can hold down the fort while we're out of town there in Atlanta. But it should be a lot of fun. But yeah, like a lot going on. And maybe Dan, if you want to share a couple observations from what you've seen at these morning workouts. You talk about these guys growing up. What have you noticed the most from these workouts?
Well, I think different attitude about some things. For example, a number of holdover veterans are lighter and leaner than they've been, but then I'll tell you the plan is over the summer, from now until August camp, is to put on weight, but they keep saying, I want to put on good weight. For example, Xavier Grimble is on the way down at 240 under his 250-pound weight that he played at last year. But he said, then I want to put the 10 pounds back, but I want it on his good weight. The same thing with George Yuko, who's a little over 275 right now. And he said, yeah, I expect to play at 285, kind of where he was last year. But he said, I'm going to put on 10 pounds of muscle. So that's the plan. So they're leaner. This is a group that right now, this is not a group that maybe, gained a lot of extra weight and then, is going to have to take it off, which was kind of the old way. You would have to take it off during the summer, work real hard. I mean, obviously, Andre Walkers and Antoine Woods, the two perfect examples, two second-year players who are key. In terms of Woods as a nose tackle and coming in, and obviously Andre Walker as the left tackle, just have lost, between them, I'm trying to think, it's like 120 pounds, something like that, between them, and, looking stronger than ever and quicker than ever, and it's, you just see that over and over again. You know, the kids are either looking stronger and or leaner, and kind of an interesting approach that just seems to be team-wide in terms of they're all very aware of where their weight is. You know, and Anthony Soraya says, you know, I'm 215, heaviest I've been. They'd like me to be 220, but it's got to be good weight. It's got to be the next 5 pounds hit to be good weight. And you just see the kids seem very aware of exactly where they are with their bodies and where they want to be and how they want to get there.
Two of the guys that we get to see a lot of are Cody Kessler and Max Wittick. And I guess that we can segue into our first question from David. He says, I'm wondering about Cody Kessler and Max Wittick. Unlike the rest of us, he has seen in... I'm sorry. So he's saying that he didn't get to see a lot of these guys from numerous practices. They've only been around 1 year. Dan, what do you see as the attributes of each, and where is your money as to who will be anointed as Matt Barkley's backup? So from the guys you've seen, Max Wittick and Cody Kessler down at USC, what have you seen, and who do you think's leading the charge right now?
Well, an easier call last year. I think Cody was definitely into the playbook quicker, more comfortable in the huddle, the kind of guy that if Matt Barkley would have gone down, you would have definitely gone with Cody of the two. He's bigger this year, probably, close to 6'2.5". He's sort of a wide-shouldered, big, long arm, rangy sort of a kid that plays more of a kind of a Drew Brees style, where he, more comfortable throwing on the run and holds on to the ball a little bit longer and, really lets the plays develop. He's got the ability to hold on to it longer because he does have, good escapability and good ability to throw the ball accurately on the run. So it's a very catchable ball, very comfortable in the huddle, kind of a kid that just, is sort of a natural leader. Now Max Wittick's kind of more the traditional, big, strong, strong-armed, as somebody who lives in Orange County, an Orange County, classic prototype Orange County quarterback who looks much more comfortable this year. Throws the ball. They're all throwing the ball with more velocity, and partly I think that's just because they're attacking more downfield. They know the receivers better. They've got such athletic receivers, and the defense is really coming and playing them hard, and it's a real challenge. So you see everybody's velocity has been kind of amped up at the quarterback spot. Wittick doesn't need to amp his up much at all. He probably more of his challenge is just to get that arm under control where he just, doesn't overthrow the ball. Not as easy a call. You've got the classic advantages of a slightly taller, bigger armed Max Wittick, or the real good presence in the pocket and huddle and escapability and the catchable ball as opposed to the, ball with more velocity. I think it'll be decided in places where, for example, when Norm Chow came up with with Matt Leinart was going to be his quarterback, we saw everything that happened on the field. We had no idea which way he was going to go because we weren't in the meetings, and you had, Matt Castle, for example, was in there. And, it was like a four-way battle, as I recall, back in 2003. And spring game, Matt Leinart got the call. And for reasons that we didn't know in terms of kind of his composure and the mastery, in the film room with Norm Chow. So it may come down to that, who are the coaches? Because whoever the quarterback is, he's basically the extension of Lane Kiffin as the play caller. And so I think that will be a comfort level that Lane Kiffin has with whichever one of those two. And I think either one of them is going to do pretty well.
And if you guys want to see highlights of these guys, we are allowed to. I think we talked about this last week. We had some questions, but we are allowed to put up 3 minutes of video highlights from these workouts. So we've been doing that from every workout. You can check them out on uscfootball.com, and you can see for yourself. So Barkley's getting most of the reps, but you do get to see Max Wittick and Cody Kessler throw the football around. We try to pick the best highlights because we can only put up 3 minutes. We are limited to that. But, yeah, you can see stuff up. But, Dan, it has been mostly Barkley what we're seeing in these things, and we're getting Wittick and Kessler kind of mixing in a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's right. And they actually don't seem to get to throw the ball quite as much. I think part of that is they're working them a lot harder, and they're doing a lot more things in the conditioning and the weight room and the running and all that kind of thing. And because this is a more veteran group, I mean, they know what the offense is. They know what defenses they're running. They've got more guys to run in there. But I thought you did a good job of showing, for example, Kessler does, will run around more back there and will let plays develop a little longer. And I know one poster reacted and said, I think Kessler holds on to the ball too long. Well, as if it were a negative. And in some ways, that's a positive, his ability to do that. And I thought you showed that. And I thought you, picked out a couple of where you really get to see the power of Wittick's arm. It's an interesting, which way do you go? And that's going to be, I think, what they pay Coach Kiffin the big bucks for.
All right. Let's move on to some different questions. This is a short one from Theo. Who do you think is the hardest hitter on the team out of the back seven besides TJ McDonald?
I think Hayes Pillar probably, Deion will hit you, pretty hard too. Hayes got 230 pounds behind him. What we haven't seen a lot of yet is Lamar Dawson really getting to get into a groove where he really runs people down. I mean, one of the best things he does is run people down, from that middle linebacker spot, sideline to sideline. He's just very, but he does it kind of in a smooth way. It's not like a real, big, he just runs over people. But I'll be interested to see when he gets to play a lot more. Although, you got to say, for example, a kid like Demetrius Wright is a safety. He will flat out run right over you. I mean, he will just drill people. He's a big-time big hitter. So it'll be interesting to see, when Gerald Bowman and Josh Shaw both have reputations as pretty big hitters, and both are big, strong kids. So I'm kind of interested. There will be some hitting, I think.
For sure, and we'll get to see Gerald Bowman. I talked to him. We'll see him out there Tuesday morning for their workout, so we should be able to get some video and pictures of him. He should be out there, so that'll be interesting to see. We haven't seen him. I guess he was at the first one, but we haven't seen him really out there since.
And his video shows a guy that's a hitter. I mean, what just jumps out at you when you look at his video from junior college.
Well, now you just mentioned some of the guys in the secondary, and this is kind of a segue into Melvin's question. Coach Harvey Hyde last week was talking about he wanted to see USC go too deep in the secondary and play two different groups of defensive backs. Melvin wants to know if that's what USC wants to do and why. Does that mean there would be a lot of blitzing, or is that a lot of man-to-man exclusively? How do you think that would work, Dan? And do you agree with that, with what Coach Harvey Hyde was saying about running two groups in the secondary?
I don't think there's any question. Lane, when I sat down with him last month, said that's absolutely a big-time goal of theirs, is to be able to rotate, everywhere and aggressively rotate. And he said, they loved the fact that Oregon probably got more mileage out of maybe not so many, super talented guys, but that they, were a year ago playing 25 regular rotation, in a 25-man regular rotation on defense and rotated at every spot. And I think, that tells you if you're going to rotate all the way through your defensive lineup, you're going to be coming after people more. I mean, part of the reason is you want to be fresh in the fourth quarter, but I think the other part is you want to be able to really go after people and really come after. I mean, USC obviously had a real problem last year in getting three and outs and making people kick quickly. I mean, they went to Oregon and he didn't have that problem. Went to Notre Dame and much of the time didn't. And that changes the whole dynamics of the game for USC. If they can get people off the field, especially with Oregon, if you can get Oregon three and outs, they get all their, you know, that offensive rhythm that they get into goes away. And so you have to do some things. You can't just, you know, stay back, play soft, hope they don't beat you deep, and get them off the field. So you've got to do things to get people off the field. You're going to play two deep rotation. I think you're going to see them naturally come after people. And let's look at it. If you look at USC's team on defense, this is not a team that's made to play soft or play safe. This is a team that's made to come and attack the offense. And so I think you're going to see more attacking. That's how Marvin Sanders coaches. That was the immediate reaction of all the players about how much they liked the new secondary coach. His favorite defense is being able to play. And same with linebacker. You know, both new coaches on defense really understand the Tampa 2, and yet really have favored a very aggressive version, a shutdown version of the Tampa 2. And it seems to fit with the personnel USC has. So I think that's what they certainly want to go toward.
Okay, yeah, we've heard Ed Orgeron talk about, you know, they want that defensive line rotation, and that makes a lot more sense. But it's interesting to hear what Lane Kiffin had to say about throughout the defense and trying to do what some other teams have done, and it'll be interesting to see what happens there. They definitely have a lot of talent in the secondary.
And
it's very
the other
deep.
Thing is they really are emphasizing with these defensive linemen that they want them lean and quick. They may be smaller up front than any team they play all year. This is not a, you know, and I know, you know, Oregon is talking about they've got an SEC kind of defensive line with a couple of 300-pounders, and, you know, Utah's got, you know, some really big guys. USC's not going that direction. USC's going the other direction. They're coming in with leaner, lighter, quicker people. And, you know, the purpose of having those kind of people is not to just play, you know, play contained, play back, play safe. The reason you've got people like that is to go get people and to attack them. So basically you look at all three levels, you know, defensive line, the linebackers, and the secondary, and between the coaches and the makeup of the personnel, it certainly looks like a team that's built to be very aggressive and maybe even take some chances, but to really go after people.
There's a follow-up question I want to get to on this from Mike, but before we get into that, we did have someone write in and concerned that are we changing the way we're doing questions on the podcast and where they're just going to come from voicemails. And no, the majority, just to let people know, like we said in the beginning of the show, you can email us podcast@usafootball.com or call and leave a voicemail or leave a voicemail on peristylepodcast.com. You can do either one. Most of the questions we get are read or email format that we read. So you can tell, you know, you can tell we've been reading questions to this podcast and for most of them. So yes, that's the normal way people kind of write in. But if you do want to hear your voice on the podcast, we can accommodate that as well. So there's no, we're not changing anything. And, you know, podcast@usafootball.com is the main way people send in the questions. But Mike, and he's called Seattle Trojan, so I assume he's up in Seattle. You were talking about, you know, letting guys loose on defense, and he had a question on defense as well. He said, defensively, we are so athletic that he feels that over-pursuing, they can start to over-pursue and get caught at times by great offensive coaches like Steve Sarkisian. I love TJ and all the hits last year. I don't want to tell great athletes not to play fast and with great emotion, but how do we still instill staying at home and doing your job without inhibiting the great athletes we have? It seems like just having great athletes that can run so well at times can also get us in trouble. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, you know, I don't know how many offenses in the Pac-12 are really geared to, you know, coming back the other way with, you know, some kind of, you know, counter and all that. That's not the direction that college football is exactly going in. So if you get somebody that wants to try to do that because they think you're quick and you might over-pursue, you know, that's, you might be better off if they are going away from what they normally do. But obviously, that's where coaching comes in. You really have to have all your bases covered. You got to have, you know, somebody covering, and you got to have them acting in unison. For example, that's one of the things we're seeing with the defense. With TJ out there doing a lot of the calls, when the players are running the practice. So a lot of it is making sure you've got that coordination where there's somebody on the backside and where they're filling all the lanes and they're not just trying to all be the first guy there to make a tackle. I think that's one of the things that happens as a team grows up together, is they start understanding all of those things. So this is not something that's a foreign concept to them. I think they wanted to play like this, and I think one of the points that the coaches will make is, we want you to play this way, but we don't need nine guys on that side of the ball and, two guys back here at the end. And I think it happened to them a couple of times in kickoff coverage where just inexplicably, they ended up out of balance and, with the Anthony Thomas at Oregon and the Notre Dame return that really kind of put both of those teams in a much better position in those games than they should have been, can't do that. And I think, they understand it, and I think that'll be part of the whole installation of a more aggressive, athletic defense will be to make sure, you're not overrunning it and getting all on the same side and giving a guy a lane to come back.
He had one follow-up too, Dan. He wants to know, is there any updates on Trey Madden?
I have not heard anything. I haven't heard whether that's an interesting. We have not seen Trey, that's a good point, Mike, and we'll check that out and see what if they've had enough time to have a sense of. I've got the sense, and I know there are people at other programs who were operated on for the same thing at the same time as Trey was in the spring, and that are talking about, well, maybe we can get this guy back for the second half of the season. You don't hear any of that at USC. You don't hear any sense of there might be a reason to try to hope that, after, 6 or 8 months, maybe there would be enough time. And I don't hear that at all. But you have heard that in other programs where they've got a particular player that pretty much had the same kind of spring, knee surgery, who they think might be able to come back. So, but we'll definitely check that out and see what. It's enough time now that we ought to have some sense of how it's going for Trey.
Okay. Let's go to Rundy next. And he says, have you heard anything about the NCAA investigation of Oregon? Do you think they will receive significant penalties? And also, I understand USC switching players' position to create team speed, but as far as a career in the NFL, does this benefit or hurt players like Deion Bailey? Those are from Rundy.
That's a good question. I think that, if you look at Deion Bailey as a strong safety in the NFL, the fact that that they're really playing to his strengths for USC, and his coverage ability and ability to pursue and tackle in the open spaces and things like that has to help Deion. I don't think it would help him as much if they were bend don't break all the time. That's just not playing to his strengths and not challenging him to be able to show what he could do. So I think that is going to benefit the USC kids. I don't think there's any question about it. In terms of Oregon and the NCAA, hey, it's a kinder, gentler NCAA today. What the heck? Why would you want to go after anybody and really mess up their program, huh? I wouldn't think the NCAA would want to do that, would they? They really seem to be showing an awful lot of, concern for how everybody's going to handle, really tough sanctions. So I wouldn't put my hopes on, Oregon's now recruiting Texas players again. All of a sudden, all the Texas players left, surprisingly, really. And now they're back to recruiting Texas again. So maybe they know something that we don't know. I don't know. But, I think Oregon will be fine. It's only one USC. Good, bad, and indifferent. There's USC is probably all by itself in terms of how the NCAA is going to deal, you know, with programs, and the kinder, gentler NCAA, I think, will come out.
You know what's funny about this, and I know we get some people that love to talk about the NCAA, and they ask, we get questions all the time, so we try to answer them, and there's other people that hate it and want to turn the show off. But real quick, the interesting part of this was when the NCAA came out with their kind of new rules, and how if USC would have happened today, the sanctions would be way worse. But so they're saying that, like, now, you know, hey, if these things got to happen in the future, programs are going to get hammered, the penalties are going to be more strict, but we've seen other programs do things that were obviously way worse and kind of get slapped on the wrist and not really have anything significant happen. So it's funny when you say there's, like, saying the rules are tougher, but in implementation of the rules, it's really not showing.
Well, this is the thing that just drives you crazy about the NCAA. Is basically, they could have the toughest rules in the world, and they could maybe say one time in 1,000, we'll implement those. And we choose you. USC, you get the implementation of the really tough ones. We're not going to see, you know, at USC, if you only wouldn't have had that tennis player, that women's tennis player from Romania, call it home on a credit card from the coach's office, you'd have been okay. But that pushed it over the hill. You know, that was just, you know, having institutional cheating through your own athletic department and through your own tutors and buying grades and, you know, having fake classes and all that, that's not all that much. We'll just make that maybe a failure to monitor. But USC, boy, that tennis player put you into lack of institutional control territory, and that's when the penalties really go up. Well, of course, it's all bogus. I mean, they're phonies, they're hypocrites. They have absolutely no integrity. The people that make decisions like that, so, you know, for whatever reason, we've asked everybody, and it's never been verbalized, never been even, you know, hinted at from somebody at the NCAA or several somebodies or a number had decided they were going to put a hit on USC for whatever reason. And you can all write in all your, you know, all your reasons there. But they clearly, it was a hit job on USC, and they were going to pursue it until they thought they had maybe enough evidence that they could justify acting like USC was comparable to either one of the Miami scandals or you know, buying players or all the things that happened that we know are, you know, academic fraud and all that kind of stuff, none of which happened at USC. It's an embarrassing blot, you know, on an organization whose conduct almost makes it impossible to be embarrassed about what they do. And it still is embarrassing to them. And, you know, they just want it to go away if they could. I guess USC is sort of obliging them. Although, if this team does what it might be the best answer of all, without a doubt, is if this team, you know, just puts it all together on their own and does what they can do, might be the best answer to the NCAA and saying, you know, we're not going to let you take us down.
I wonder what this is going to mean for the future as well. Like, we haven't seen other programs get hammered. Like you said, it looked like a hit job against USC. But say, you know, something major does happen at an Alabama or an LSU, something where you know they can recruit like USC can recruit. And maybe it's a different thing where USC's kind of out in an island out here. No one really on the West Coast has been able to take advantage of USC's dominance. But, you know, in the SEC, you know, it could be a little bit more competitive. I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, every program's different. But if USC does come through and say, wins the Rose Bowl or heck, wins a national championship this year with 10 scholarships down, I wonder what that does to the NCAA thinking, knowing that, hey, we can hammer a team that you think would knock them into submission. And really, it was kind of like 1 year. If Pete Carroll didn't leave the program, like, how, I mean, I don't know. I mean, the team probably had a little bit more success, that transition and transfers and all things like that. There was a little bit of turmoil. But it really didn't last all that long, Dan. And now for them to be back, you know, it looks like full bore and still recruiting like nobody's business and just it, you know, kicking ass on the field and off the field. Yeah. It's interesting to see what the NCAA is going to do going forward, knowing that, hey, are these penalties enough? Or is this a unique situation? Or if it's a major program, do we have to hit them hard? I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure what they're going to think about this going forward.
Well, and that's the point. You know, here the NCAA tends to punish people that had nothing to do with the supposed, you know, crimes or infractions. You know, let's take 10 scholarships away from 10 kids whose names we don't even know, you know, who will never get to go to USC. Oh, yeah, that's a good idea. You know, and so it doesn't change anything. It basically, it's what bureaucrats do to act like they're doing something. And USC might be the perfect case of saying, what, you know, you wanted them to give up football? Other than that, they were going to still be USC. And if they got it together now, obviously USC had to have the right person come in and the right coaching staff. But they can't come up with a penalty that says USC can no longer be USC. I mean, it was obvious some of the SEC people wanted USC not to be in a place where there's really good weather, or not to be a program that has a really good history or a really good tradition, or to be at a university that's, you know, one of the fastest rising academic institutions in the world. And all of that, you know, it's like, if only we could do something. Well, you can't. I mean, you know, what are you going to do unless you take away the football program? So it might demonstrate the futility of the way the NCAA goes about things, which obviously any of us who've spent any time studying what the NCAA does understand the complete, absolute futility. Now, obviously, you know, if you're Ohio State or maybe Oregon or North Carolina, and you're well situated in terms of the NCAA bureaucracy and the people in place who are going to protect you, you like it the way it is. This is good. If you're the SEC, you like it. You know, you like the fact that nobody in your conference anymore gets penalized, just, you know, because of the way, you know, things are set up. They don't, you know, look at the same set of circumstances or worse set of circumstances as a real problem unless it's a school that's not favored. So, you know, what my confidence level in the NCAA's ability to take the right lessons from this is probably zero. The only good news, I think, that we've seen recently is the fact that there were some people in the USC case, for example, who I think really liked talking about themselves as being the avenging angels, and we're going to show those rules, lawbreakers and all that. Well, those people aren't around so much anymore. They're not jumping on these new Committee on Infractions cases. They're having trouble filling out their panels on some of these cases when people are dropping off. It's not, and I said last week, it's not so much of a resume enhancer to say, yeah, I'm on the NCAA Committee on Infractions, because a lot of people now look at you like, ew, you are? That's not such a good deal. What were you guys doing? So I think that at least has turned, that you can't be, you know, Josephine Pitutto and just say, boy, I'm responsible for the NCAA's way of, you know, deciding and punishing rules breakers. You know, and I think for a while that was like a really cool thing, and they'd write nice things about you in Sports Illustrated. I don't think they're going to do that anymore. So I'm not. So if there's any one good thing, that's the one good thing. And if the next good thing is if they call you up and say, would you like to be on the Committee on Infractions? Most people, the next thing you're going to hear is the phone click. He's not here. Call tomorrow, you know. So that may be the one good thing that came out of this. And the USC doing what they're doing may be the second, where it says, basically, you can't do this to people. It's not right.
All right. Okay, that's enough NCAA talk for now. That's good. Sorry I had to get that out of the way, folks. But, okay, here's Lee in Lakewood. He had a few questions. His first one is, how's Chad Wheeler coming along, and will he play defensive end or offensive tackle? I haven't heard anything about him in some time.
He looks like he's a lot bigger. He is the – and when we look out there, we say, okay, Andre Walker may not be the heaviest guy. He's still the biggest guy on the field. But Jed Wheeler, when they stand next to one another, he's the tallest guy out there. He is a got a big long frame. I think he's got some potential, and they're definitely keeping him as an offensive tackle. He's youngish, smart kid. I think he's got really good potential. He's just got a wonderful looking frame. They're going to have some really tall linemen here in the next few years, I think, a little bit will depend on how does he fill out, how strong does he get. But I think he's got some potential and probably athletic enough maybe to where there is a question of can he go to the other side. I certainly think right now they like him as an offensive tackle.
Yeah, I got to see him in high school, and he did a really good job playing defensive end, but it does seem like they're grooming him towards offensive tackle right now. He's getting a lot of instruction when the team's doing their offseason workouts. So we'll try to give you some updates on Chad. He's got this long flowing hair now. So give you up there.
Yeah.
Two other questions. One, did USC give Elijah Steen a scholarship? He's that walk-on safety from Orange County, I believe. He's a walk-on though, Dan. Right?
Irvine kid. I don't think they've given any of the walk-ons new, or I mean the issue with new walk-ons is they're still to be resolved the exact number in terms of some of the holdover walk-ons who earn scholarships. So I think those numbers will play out over the summertime. But they have to be down to 75 on scholarship by July 31st, I guess, is the cutoff date. So I would be surprised that it will open up enough that a new walk-on would get a scholarship. And as some of us have been there have said, that Ryan Dillard looks like he might be in the mix, cornerback from Atlanta, if you're going to be, giving out walk-ons scholarships. You would have to put him in the mix for anything that's available.
Yeah, for sure. And then one last question. He wanted to know where we stand with Montrevious Adams. I'll kind of take that. We're going to talk to Gerard Martinez tomorrow about it. We do have a lot of defensive line questions to get to, but he's the top defensive tackle in the country out of Vienna, Georgia, another Georgia kid, five-star. So he's the only five-star Rivals.com defensive tackle in the country. Likely he's going to probably end up somewhere in the SEC. He just visited Alabama this past weekend, and looks like he's going to make his decision on signing day. But we will see him at the five-star challenge, so Gerard will get a chance to talk to him and see where he stands with USC. And we can talk to Gerard tomorrow on the podcast about that.
The thing I'd like to see is comparing him, to Bigelow. I would just think that it would be nice to have him in the same place and see what that comparison looks like in terms of who is, who's the top kid, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and then they list Bigelow as like a strong side defensive end, so they're kind of different positions, but certainly they're going to go up against some of the same top offensive linemen. That's what I like. I mean, the one-on-ones for offense defensive line, even though there's no pads, are usually a lot of fun to watch, and we get some really good footage of these guys. So you can see them, you can see, two of your favorite defensive linemen go against, the same offensive linemen and see how they do.
You get to see their feet and their hands and their hips and just in general, who gets his in front of the other guy, and who beats the other guy to the punch and all that. And the thing I'm, interested in is the last, listed weight on Bigelow was 322 pounds or something like that. So if that's, the correct weight, he would certainly have to, not think of him as a defensive end, but it would be interesting to see how he matches up. And I guess the defensive end from Georgia ended up now at Clemson, the other kid that's, in the running for, top player, on the front line, and that the SEC lost out on him, in terms of commitments anyway.
Right.
It'd be hard to see them. They had to build a wall around Georgia to keep that kid from leaving, SEC country, because that wouldn't be a good trend for them if, that's clearly the place that they've had the advantage is big athletic frontline defenders, and they start leaving the state. Not so good. Yeah. Like if Jarvis Jones are still at USC, you know. But every once in a while, you get a kid out of Georgia. Obviously, Ryan Dillard, for example, was a pretty darn good player with Division I offers. You know, growing up in Atlanta, and he grew up as a USC fan in Atlanta. It was his dream school. So you never know where you might run into a kid like that. And the thing that may be working, to tie into our last comment about the NCAA, the fact that USC could be putting together for a couple of years these sort of a super elite top 15 classes might be enough for a kid to sit there and say, that's kind of a neat thing to be one of those 15 guys. You know, and obviously it'll somewhat depend on how USC does this year and that. But that might be an attractive thing for a kid to say, wow, that would be something if I were one of those guys.
Yeah, it's like a more – I've talked about this with Gerard. It's like a more exclusive club where you're kind of like, you know, you're not going to be part of a big class of 25 or 30. You're part of 15. It's small. And, you know, there's already a whole bunch of five stars. You know, if you're part of that group, you're worth something because it's a significant – it's like a significant – it was a smaller club in the back that there's no sign on it, but, man, everyone wants to go in that place. It seems like that's kind of what's happening right now.
Well, and USC always was somewhat exclusive. I mean, USC wasn't out recruiting 35 guys and running guys off every year, you know, and where you'd recruit 100 and over 5 years, some of those schools are recruiting like 175 players and with a scholarship limit of 85, you know, and obviously a whole lot of kids were disappearing. And that was never the case at USC. So I think you always had a chance to be exclusive, but now it's just really obvious if you're one of those kids. Does that, you know, put you in a different class from, you know, and some of those, you know, competitive kids, that's what they want, you know? I mean, if you look back at some of the, you know, Brian Cushing, Keith Rivers, Mike Williams, guys like that, they just saw something in USC that was exactly what they wanted. So I think it's interesting the way USC's A, going after these kids earlier and more publicly and more in a sense of taking advantage of what could have been a negative and turning it into a positive. And that's one of the genius, I think, moves of this coaching staff is to take what everybody – I mean, you couldn't read a story – for a year and a half about USC without somebody talking about the downside, the negatives, of the sanctions, the scholarship sanctions. And they wrote that until it no longer was a negative. And now you don't read people writing those same analyses of how are they going to be able to recruit, you know, where are they going to be able to And they wrote that all the way up to the point where, wait a minute, it isn't a negative. There are no, you know, and all of a sudden, you don't read about that anymore, do you?
No, it's pretty funny. All right, well, we got a couple more to get to, and we'll let you go, Dan. Theo had another one. Talk about last year there was a lot of talk about there was new Nike uniforms, and four members of the USC team were selected to wear them. Like, they were modernized uniforms. That went very well. I think the players really liked it, but there hasn't really been a lot of new information since. Have you heard anything about that, or is anything new?
Well, I don't think it's so much. Yes, he's really going to stay traditional, and you're not going to see numbers. You're not going to probably see, you know, black uniforms and all that. I think the newness in those uniforms, and they actually debuted them on a day I guess it was raining, and part of it was they were a whole different way of wicking the moisture. And that kind of thing. They were more of the technology and maybe the fit a little bit where they didn't, I mean, obviously the way they're doing them now and the way they're actually have that stuff that makes them stick to the pads and what have you, so you don't have a handle on them to, you know, grab onto especially the offensive players. But I don't think it was so much, I think people tend to say, you know, how will it change in the style? I don't think it's going to change the style look almost at all. Maybe a little, you know, logo at the in the, you know, the V-neck or something like that. But nothing that's just obviously going to jump out at you in terms of color or striping or any of those kinds of things. I think mostly it would be in terms of the materials and the ability to, you know, handle all kinds of weather and things like that. I think that's definitely happening. I mean, they're getting the upgraded, you know, new materials and things like that. I think Nike was basically, I think, showing USC this is what they're going to look like, this is what they're going to be in this material, which is what they wore those days at practice.
Okay, and then we got two last questions. It's the same topic, so let me read both of them to you, Dan. First is Mark in La Quinta. He said, Dan has made his thoughts well known on what he thinks of SEC and their scheduling numerous home games and FCS opponents. And Dan, before I even finish, I was just reading a tweet now. SEC teams will be favored in 51 of their 56 non-conference games this year by an average margin of more than 3 touchdowns. So that's pretty ridiculous, but...
Who screwed up in those other 5 games? Man, where did they go wrong? They must not have come to the SEC scheduling seminar that Mike Sly had for him.
That's funny. But he goes on to say, what I would like to have both of your thoughts on is what your recommendations for selecting which 4 teams would participate in a BCS tournament. And then also Martin... He actually wrote, I think it was like a 1,500-page like proposal for, we can't really read that, Martin, for playoffs and what he thinks about what's going on. But he was going on to say, is it possible that if the conferences cannot come to an agreement on a playoff model, and being that the Big 12 and SEC have founded their own bowl game alliance, could the Pac-12 and the Big 10 break away from the BCS and bring along maybe the WAC or the Mountain West and include independents like Notre Dame, Navy, Army, BYU, to form a new conference and have 8-team playoff model and have the Rose Bowl as their championship game? That does seem a little far-fetched, and out of there you're going to exclude a lot of great football teams. But maybe, Dan, give your thoughts on those questions and your overall
thoughts. I think the first question is, I don't have a good model for a 4-team playoff because I think that's a contradiction in terms. 4 teams is not a playoff. You know, 65 in the NCAA basketball tournament or 68, whatever they've got now, that's a playoff. 4 teams, that's the Final Four. That's the end of the, you know. And so to act as if with all these different scenarios in terms of 8-game regular season schedules and 9 games and, you know, teams not even playing the good teams in their own conference, you know, and the fact that if you're in the SEC, you can schedule, you know, you start the year off with pretty much an 8-game home schedule with 4 you know, runovers at home to start, or you never leave your time zone. You know, you hardly ever even have to take a plane. You know, you don't, all that kind of stuff. Those differences are so great that you can't possibly overcome them in terms of really knowing. It's one of the neat things, if you really do it right and you have the right couple of teams in the championship game, you just never know. Remember all the smart guys at the Oklahoma-USC game were just so convinced Oklahoma, they were too big, they were too strong, they were too powerful, they were too da-da-da-da. USC was just too glamorous, and they practices, they had way too much fun, and we just know Oklahoma's going to be so big and strong and tough. Now, we're not allowed to get any of their practices, and we don't really know for sure, but that's what we're pretty convinced that's going to happen until the first play of the game, and Mike Patterson nailed Peterson 4 yards in the back, you know, his own backfield, knocked him one way and the ball the other way, and everybody thought, what's going on here? And you know, people didn't know that. The Oklahoma coaches didn't understand that, I don't think, what was probably going to happen. So to act like you can come up with a panel that would be independent enough and informed enough to try to, you know, tell you who the 4 teams should be, I think 4 is really... People say that's a good number. It's a really bad number because basically you can already see the SEC and the Big 12 trying to game the system, and you know, the way they've framed their meetings and their demands and their dialogue and all that, you know, and you know, 4-4-4 they're yelling, and you know, like, we want the best 4 teams. Who the heck knows who the best 4 teams are? Based on the SEC's regular season last year, LSU was the best team. You know, they didn't have Alabama above them. So I just think four is not going to work. And I do think the Big 12, the Pac-12 and the Big Ten do have an opportunity here to stick to their guns and basically, you know, keep the value of the Rose Bowl and go, you know, and say, look, no other model really will work. The presidents are not going to allow us to have eight teams in a playoff. And unless you can have eight teams, you really can't have anything that really deserves a label playoff. I like the plus one model after the Rose Bowl. Somehow, you know, you'll have to, you know, fight this out and battle it out and use all the, you know, computers and all the human selection people and all the polls and come up with the two teams that deserve to play for the national championship after the bowl games. And I think the one good thing about the bowl system is it gives you one more cross-check where somebody in the SEC has to play somebody outside the SEC almost all the time in a different place, and you get a chance to have one more fix on who really is the best team and or the two best teams and who are the two teams that deserve to go there. And if something like 2003 happens where USC got screwed and you ended up with an Oklahoma team that lost by, 28 points in their last game, still got into the championship game against LSU, the AP poll, you know, voted and gave USC the national championship, and it was as legitimate, more legitimate than anything that came from the BCS that year. So, to me, that would be the way to go. I think the thing about Notre Dame is, because Notre Dame plays Michigan, Michigan State, Purdue, and they play USC and Stanford, and I think they even pick up Arizona State, I think Notre Dame and somebody on the board had a really good suggestion just to, in effect, make Notre Dame a de facto member of the Big Ten Pac-12 scheduling combine. And in effect, Notre Dame already is kind of there. So that if Notre Dame runs the table against the Big Ten and the Pac-12 any particular year, Notre Dame, then move on to the championship game. So that actually gives Notre Dame a way of getting there based on their own schedule, and a legitimate way if they would run the table against USC, Stanford, Michigan, Michigan State, Purdue. You know, the Ohio State people might not like that, but I think you could make a case that would. So to me, that solves a lot of things. I'm a big time plus one person right now. I don't trust anything else.
All right, Dan. Well, appreciate you coming on the show and sharing all your thoughts. We hit a lot of topics today. And with Harvey Hyde on Secret Assignment, we had to go over 50 minutes. So sorry we kept you so long.
Oh, that's great. No, there's a lot there. That's the thing. For all these years, the momentum and the amount of news, for example, the way USC's recruiting now, the way everybody's recruiting, there's more recruiting news, more of the year earlier. Just think of how much more has happened on the recruiting front this year than any year that we can ever imagine at this time of year. I mean, there were times this was a downtime. And then if you're looking toward the potential of a national championship, every one of the summer workouts is important. And with all the guys coming back and all that, it's just, you know, there is no almost downtime anymore. It's like somebody asked the other day, you know, what do you do in the downtime? And you just say, downtime? has there been any downtime? I'm not sure that's actually happened. I mean, who knows? Andre Walker leaving, going to under 300 pounds that just happened recently might be as important a story as anything that's had for USC. I mean, there's those things out there that just keep, and, it is a 52-week-a-year deal now.
It certainly is. But, again, thanks again for coming on the show, and we'll talk to you again next week, and I'll be off to the Rivals Challenge, but we will have Gerard on. We'll try to record either tonight or tomorrow morning before I leave, and then we'll go out and get Gerard on the Peristyle Podcast, Trojan Blast Recruiting Edition. But everyone else, thank you very much for tuning in to the Peristyle Podcast, and we'll talk to you all next week.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your iPod or MP3 player for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.